6th, the 6 things that Yahweh says he hates. And then the 7th, which is the thing that he says among all of the others is uniquely an abomination, are as follows. A maligning soul whose breath utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods. A false witness. Before I read the 7th, Kirk, are you familiar with the Habakkuk 2 and Yahweh's condemnation of a lone individual for being the plague of death?
Well, I've certainly read it a few times, yes, sir.
Yeah. Is there any chance that that his condemnation of Shaul could be a condemnation of the place known as Sheol?
No, because it doesn't have a soul.
Yeah, and it's that's the point that I'm getting at here.
No,
your point is that's the point. That is the point I'm driving at. Because when Yahweh condemns Shaul, calling him the plague of death, he says that he and his soul are the plague of death. And so not only isn't Sheol a masculine individual, and therefore a he, but beyond that, and not only that, Sheol is simply a prison. So it can't inflict any damage. And Sheol is a prison where no one dies. So Sheol can't be the plague of death, because if you're in Sheol, you're going to be eternally incarcerated. But it says that Shaul and his soul are the plague of death.
Mm-hmm.
So we're dealing with a single individual soul here. And it's the same one that is condemned in Chabaouk 666 years before Paul would write his first letter. And so it's the same thing here.
You should say that again, though, for your audience.
Exactly 666 years before Paul would write his first letter to the Galatians, where he utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods. Exactly 666 years before he did that, Yahweh, through the prophet Chabaouk, called Paul out by name to tell us that he was the plague of death. Called him out by name. Told us when he would come, that he would come during the fulfillment of the Moed, the meetings, which are Pesach, Matzah, Bekorim, and Shavuot, exactly when Yahusha was fulfilling these first 4 Moed Mikre. That's when Shaul arrived on the scene. Told us that his audience would be Gentiles, which is what Paul claimed for himself. He told us that he would use circular reasoning and that he would be deceitful, which is exactly what Paul used. He said that he would base his testimony on this false notion that God could die for your sins when God cannot die. That he would be fixated with a male genitalia, which is why Paul had his love affair with Timothy. Personally circumcising Timothy, even though he said, if you are circumcised, I want you to be castrated. Even though he said that if you're circumcised, you can't be saved. And God told us 666 years before Paul wrote his first letter that his argument would be against circumcision. And that Paul would claim a religious community for himself, and that that no one who accepted what he had to say would find satisfaction.
If you're a rational human being, how could you, what can you do with that other than say, man, that's Paul and that's bad news?
Yeah, what are you going to do other than that's Paul and that's really, really bad news? Like, I mean, it's not a question of whether or not it's Paul.
Yeah.
He talks about the audience that he claimed, the time that he would arrive, and he called him out by name and condemned his testimony. I mean, there is a 0% chance it's anyone other than Paul. And he called him the plague of death and said, no one who believes him will find satisfaction. And then here he's talking about this maligning soul who utters sedition, breathing out slanderous and deceptive testimony, which incites the deluded to worship false gods as a false witness. So it's somebody that's claimed to be a witness on behalf of the real God, inducing people to worship a false God. The Lord of Christianity is Satan, folks. The charis, the gospel of grace, is a ode to the Greek and Roman religions. No, that's the truth. You know, the Christian that is going out and looking for their Christmas tree and putting up their Christmas lights and all of this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, Merry Christmas. You are celebrating a Greek and Roman and Babylonian festival that not only has nothing to do with God, that God would view as an abomination. You know, what's wrong with you? It goes on to say, and then, this is the abomination, and then, one who claims to be sent out as a messenger to do away with something important. That's what Paul claimed, that he was the messenger of God, been hand-chosen by God, and that his purpose was to do away with the Torah and its covenant, replacing the Torah with his New Testament, with his gospel of grace, with his faith-based religion. With a faith-based religion, you don't need to know who God is. You don't need to know what he said. You don't need to know what he did. You don't need to know what he's offering. You don't need to know how to respond to him. No, it was a faith-based religion. Replaced all of the teaching, all of the guidance that God had given. While Paul was irrationally claiming to speak for the very God whose testimony he was doing away with. Creating controversy and contentious strife between brothers. Read the testimony of the Jerusalem summit. Paul's version of it's found in Galatians. Luke's is found in Acts. And then look what Paul would say about Shimon Kefesh. In Galatians, condemning him. Look what he says in Timothy about Yahochanan. Those are the top two disciples. No one that was closer to Yahusha than Shimon Kefesh, Peter, and Yahochanan, John. And the whole purpose of his second letter to Timothy is to have Timothy go in there and mop up the mess that Yahochanan had made. That he had to rebaptize everybody because the baptism of Yahochanan was totally and completely faulty, as was his message. That would mean the book of Yahochanan would be false. That would mean that the book of Revelation would be false.
Overwhelming.
It's overwhelming, isn't it? So Yah's advice to his children is, my son, my child, closely observe and attentively focus on, be preserved by, the directions and the terms of the binding contract, mitzvah, the prescriptions and conditions of the covenant, the instructions of a father to a child. This covenant of your father, and do not actually forego or reject the Torah, which is the teaching and guidance of your mother. So, the antidote for Pauline Christianity that would do away with the Torah was to
study what Yah actually said.
Right. Is to not forgo the Torah. So, if you choose not to forgo the Torah, then you can't be a Christian. You can't lug around a Christian New Testament. You can't believe Paul.
No.
You have to reject all of those things. Paul, your New Testament, and Christianity. If you're going to follow God's advice. And you carry along this book. Now, you'll read in your perverted English translation, it'll say the teaching of your mother. And it'll say teaching of your mother because they really want to translate Torah law.
Mm-hmm.
But it can't be translated law. It means teaching, direction, guidance, and instruction. So is there a problem in translating the Torah in this passage, as all English Bibles do, teaching?
Now, teaching is good, but the mm-hmm. trouble with what they do with mother and father is they try to make it your earthly mother and father. And in the statements in stone, he annuls that right away. He tells you these are the people right. that will louse you up.
Yeah, and that's your earthly father and your earthly mother.
Mother. So right. I'm your father.
Right.
And the set apart spirit acts as your mother.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's and well, that's true and valid. It's actually not where I was going on it.
Okay.
It's true and valid. And the Torah can be translated teaching, but what's the problem in translating Torah teaching? It's the fact that they make it the teaching of your mother here so that there's not one Christian that knows the word really is Torah. And then when Torah appears elsewhere, and it's not from the your spiritual mother, the set-apart spirit, they'll translate it as law.
Mm-hmm.
Elsewhere. But they know that if they translate it as law here, then they make their law translation of Torah look like a absolute fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Because mothers don't lay down the law. And so they know they can't change Torah to law here without exposing their malfeasance. So they're inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
They won't transliterate it, and they won't, they'll translate it accurately here, just to keep from making a fool of themselves when they change it to law elsewhere. That's the problem. If they every place Torah appeared, they translated it teaching, then everyone would know that Torah does not mean law.
Yeah.
That it's teaching.
Every dictionary, it all says that.
Yeah.
It's teaching.
Well, it's based on the verb yara. Yeah, it tells us the basis of it. It's based on the verb yara. Yara means source from which teaching, direction, guidance, and direction flow.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's no question as to the basis of Torah and what it means. And you can look up every word that has the root of Torah in it. And what you'll find is
well,
that
we
it's...
Did. Went down, I mean, we
yeah,
did.
We did. We have. We've shared it a bunch of times. And so that's the problem here. But and I chose here to both transliterate it and translate it. Torah is both a proper noun and a title, and therefore when you're dealing with titles, you always have the option. You can transliterate them, like Masaya, like Elohim. Is a title from Eloah.
Almighty?
Mm-hmm. For Almighty. So you can do that, or you can translate them. Names you have to transliterate. But you can do both. You know, I think that you can do one or the other, but the best option is to, if you're going to transliterate it, then always convey the meaning, which is a translation. Yeah. Here in the text, I decided to provide both. The Torah, which is the teaching and guidance of your mother, so that people understand that. I think that if people were to realize that teaching here was from the word Torah and that both words appeared in an English translation and they could equate Torah with teaching, then all of the myth of Christianity, where we're no longer bound by the law, we're now in the New Testament and the Gospel of Grace, that all of that mythology of the Torah being a set of laws which we have to obey and we have been freed from would dissipate, because they would know that, no, Torah doesn't mean law.
No. Never did, and it ain't the Ten Commandments.
No. No, there's only one of the ten that was written in the imperative mood, and it was in the imperative mood. While it can convey a command, it is primarily the mood of second person volition.
Uh-huh.
And so said, you should choose. This is something that the only one of the ten that actually was written from a volitional perspective, and it's the one about your mother and father, just the one that we're talking about right here. This is the covenant of your father and the Torah teaching of your mother. It's the Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother, and that's who is being referred to there. And it says you should choose of your own volition to highly value your father and mother, and that's the Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother in the instruction. So that's the antidote, and yet no one bothers to take it, even though the antidote is being offered by God.
While we're on it, the retort or the... People will say, well, that's fine, but I can't give up my Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus, not even a word to the 17th century. I mean, you got roots from Jesus and all those sort of things, or Jesus or whatever,
right.
And Zeus, but Jesus became synonymous with the King James Bible, which was the King James Bible.
Right.
And by the time you get through, you work through that, you go, why am I clinging to this strange word? It has no relationship to the to Yahusha.
Right.
But don't make me give it up. Don't make me give up law. Don't make me, because that changes everything. Don't make me give up commandment, because that changes everything.
Right.
Don't make me give up my Lord Jesus. And then, boy, that's a mouthful.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yet
it's all crap. I mean, it's just all rubbish.
Yeah. I haven't offended you. I'm trying to clean up your house.
Right. Yeah. Trying to sweep away the trash that is making you sick.
Yeah.
So he says, choose to increasingly fasten them upon your heart, which is what Dion was going to do himself when he returns. But we can, in the meantime, fasten them, mentally tie and bind and join them, associate them with our heart, which would give us a proper and useful frame of reference. Continually electing of your own free will to place them as an adornment on your neck. And we talked about why that's important. You know, what comes into and out of your throat?
Why, your words and your breath.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and nourishment.
And nourishment, of course, too.
Yeah. And of course, you can vomit up Christianity. Or you can recite the Torah of Yahuwah. And you can swallow poison, i.e. religion. Or you can swallow that which is nourishing. In your walking, she will continually lead and guide you. Because where are we? Is there a place anywhere in the Torah that we're asked to take a little walk?
Absolutely. It's the pathway home. It's in fact, the whole Torah is teaching us the path to the way to go to live.
Yes.
Especially through Passover, from Passover all the way to Sukkah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
the path. She will guide you on your path.
Mm-hmm.
Accompanying you when you rest. She will watch over you. Is there a day of rest?
Absolutely. It's
all right. So you want to be inspired on your day of rest?
Mm-hmm.
You want the set-apart spirit of Yahweh to help you be observant and pay attention, be thoughtful? Consider it. Yeah, well, that's something that God has made available if you study the Torah, if you observe the Torah. And when you awake, she will communicate with you, enabling you to seriously consider the situations and the instructions. Sirach, she will direct you and your attention to the content of the guidance, focusing upon the apparent thought behind it. Pondering the reasons for it. Boy, this word, Sirach, I love that word. Because it's one thing to read something. It's another to understand the thought behind it. You know,
right.
Why was this guidance? What was the purpose of this guidance? What was the thought process? Pondering the reasons for it. That's the fun of studying the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms.
Not a dip.
Yeah, making the connections, going from knowing to understanding. And God's saying that if you focus on the Torah, then the set-apart spirit is going to enable you to seriously consider the situation and the instructions, directing your attention to the content of the guidance, focusing on the apparent thought behind it, pondering the reasons for it. Written in the call stem, which denotes a literal interpretation of the actual communication and consideration, and the imperfect conjugation, which conveys that we ought to be participating in this thought-provoking exchange on a regular basis. For indeed, the prescriptions and the conditions of the covenant, the mitzvah, are a lamp illuminated by olive oil, a near, and the Torah is a light. They are the way of lives for rational discourse about being right. You know, it's hard to imagine a more succinct statement by Yahweh, particularly since this is a statement that no Christian can acknowledge. No Christian can accept. But God himself said, for indeed, he, surely, truly, emphasizing and strengthening this statement, because as a song, sign of belonging, the prescriptions and conditions of the covenant, the mitzvah, the directions and the terms of the binding contract, the instructions from the father to his children regarding the family, are a lamp illuminated by olive oil, a near. N-Y-R. Want to take a stab at defining near? N-Y-R.
Son, of course, that's an inheritance.
Yeah. Yeah, a child born with an inheritance.
Sure, and the Y is the helping hand of Yahweh reaching down to lift us up.
So not just any child. The inheritance here is being lifted up by Yahweh.
Yeah.
Being able to grasp hold of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
Holding his hand.
And, of course, the Rosh, when you're just using nothing, the only symbol is just the head, you're engaging your four senses out of your five senses, no touch, of course, but the four senses, to understand, to see, to observe, to shamar, basically.
Right.
What he asks you to do is to have rational thought and come to a conclusion so that you mm-hmm. can understand.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, it's a person engaging in observation and rational thought. On coming to appreciate how the hand of Yahweh is reaching down and out to children born with an inheritance.
Offering you this inheritance. Pay attention.
Yeah.
And then respond.
Right. And that's the lamp illuminated by olive oil. Now, we've shared this before. It's two different things. One is light, which is comprehensive. Yahweh called light into existence. He said that he was light in the opening statement in Genesis. If you want to understand him, you'd have to understand him in the context of light, of being an energy-based spirit. And the enormous power that goes along with that, so much, so almost infinitely so, compared to the lack of power of the physical world.
And he also reinforced that with Abraham.
Yeah. And the lamp is just one source of light. Now, it's a source of light here that this is a lamp with olive oil. So olive oil is synonymous with the spirit. But as you're saying, yes, he explained light to Abram. Abraham, what did he do? Didn't he take him?
Took him right there and showed it to him.
Yeah. When Abraham says, I don't get it, what am I inheriting?
My deal here.
Yeah, he took him right to heaven and then showed him the light of the stars and said, this is what you're inheriting. Oh, I get it. So, Kirk, how can the Torah be a light? In fact, it's how can the Torah be equated as a light by Yahweh and be the a source of enslavement and incapable of saving and something that needs to be discarded by Pauline Christians?
Well, then that's synonymous, so you have to choose one or the other if you're going to be if you want to be translator.
Does Yahweh call himself light?
He does. It's his favorite metaphor, I think, for himself, so we can understand it, because we have some kind of relationship to light. We can understand that to some degree.
Yeah. And so he's saying that he is best understood as light, and then he's saying that this Torah is light.
Mm-hmm.
Torah equals light. Yahweh equals light.
And we use the comic strip with the eyeball, with the light bulb rather coming on when you...
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. Here, I mean, it's in our culture, it's in our everything we think.
So if I were to give you these two equations, Yahweh says, Yahweh equals light.
Mm-hmm.
And right here he said, Torah equals light. Mm-hmm. What other conclusion can you draw?
Well, then it makes sense of why he called himself the Word.
Yep.
Well, when it comes to mind, immediately the Word is enlightening.
Yeah. How about the most simple conclusion of all? Yahweh equals light. Torah equals light. The common denominator is light. Right. Therefore,
the Torah.
By substitution...
But the Torah is synonymous with Yah. I mean...
Yeah, that's Yahweh equals Torah. Torah equals Yahweh.
Right.
When you annul the Torah, when you do away with the Torah, when you besmirch the Torah, when you want no association with the Torah, you are besmirching and annulling God.
You've totally rejected Yah with it.
That is correct.
So they are totally synonymous.
Yeah. That is absolutely correct. They are synonymous. That's the beauty of this. Now, Paul said that it was impossible for the Torah to save in Galatians, and he in Romans he refers to the Torah, equates the Torah to a dead husband. So the Torah is dead, and it cannot save, according to Paul. Now, mind you, that's not according to me, that's not according to God, that's not according to Yosef, but...
He never proves it, he just says it.
Yeah, he's, of course.
Say anything you want, but that'll prove nothing.
Well, you probably ought not say anything you want, because you ought not say that. But
no, but I mean,
but that's his claim.
Say anything you want, but they got to prove it, and he never offers his proof of anything.
So here he's saying that the conditions of the covenant and the Torah are not only a lamp and a light, they are the way of lives.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm understanding it here, you can... you and I can only have but two lives. That most people only have one life,
mm-hmm.
and that there's those of us who have accepted the covenant as it's in the Torah actually have two lives.
Right.
And it's chayim here, man. It's not chai. Chai means the Hebrew word for life. It's chayim. Y-M in Hebrew
plural converts
a singular thing to a plural. It's not a mistake. I didn't say it's the light of, the Torah is the light of life. He says the Torah is the light of lives.
Right.
So he's talking about two things. He's saying that his Torah is going to enlighten you in terms and guide you on how to get the most out of this life, your mortal life, and it's the only source that is going to get you to an immortal life.
Right. Then you have to go to the nefesh, your soul,
mm-hmm.
being your essence, and what's going to happen to it, and will it continue to live, and in which situation will it live in if it does?
Right, because your body is not going to.
No.
Your body's only going to have, bodies only have one life. There's only one life per body, but there can be two lives for a soul.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want the second life for a soul, according to Yahuwah, the only way is the Torah and its covenant.
And it's reinforced by Yosha, and you did a week of programs on his discussion with Nicodemus.
Yeah, but you know something? It's interesting here that Yahweh didn't use Bereth, which is the Hebrew word for the family-oriented covenant relationship. He used mitzvah. Do you wonder why he used mitzvah as opposed to Bereth?
Well, it's the terms and conditions.
There you go. That's the terms and conditions, the directions and instructions regarding the covenant. Because just simply knowing if there's a covenant doesn't do any good.
You got to know what the contract is.
You got to know what this contract was written between Yahweh and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And initially written with Abraham and Sarah. And then with Yahweh reaffirmed it with their child, Yitzhak, and then he reaffirmed it with his child, Jacob. And then he reaffirmed it with the descendants of Yisrael. He renamed Jacob Yisrael. And he said there's one covenant for everyone. All right, so Yahweh has issued a covenant. Did he issue it just verbally or in writing?
Both.
Okay, so he has a verbal agreement that he affirmed in writing regarding this covenant. Does he ever say, I have two of them?
Never.
Never once. Always just one of them. And does he say this one is going to have a limited shelf life, or does it say it's forever?
Yeah. Olam, forever.
Olam, forever. Forever and ever. Okay, so he's got this covenant, and does he ask anything of Abram to participate, or said, oh, hey, Abram, I've got this covenant. You don't need to know anything about it. You can take it all on
faith. I don't want to do nothing. I'll take it.
Yeah, you have it all on faith. I don't want you to do diddly squat. I'll do everything. You don't need to know anything. You don't need to come to know me. You don't need to listen to me.
No.
Nothing. Just, but I got this.
Nothing relationship with you.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. I don't know why I'm even going to tell you what the benefits are, because, it doesn't make any difference anyway. That's not the approach he took, is it?
No, that's not a relationship.
No. And the approach he took is, I've got a covenant, and here are the things that I want you to do. And the first was to walk away from your country, which is the emphasis of this whole proverb. Walk away from your religion, your country, from Babel, which is you'd have to walk away from your holy Bible, because it's based on Babel, means with Baal.
With Baal.
It means to confuse. And so...
Disassociate. disassociate from your...
So he's emphasizing the terms and conditions, because if you don't know the terms and conditions of the covenant doesn't do you any good.
No. How can you respond to something if you don't know how to respond? That was my thing in Christianity. Okay, Jesus saves. Okay, now what do you do?
Right.
I mean...
How? And who is this guy? And why did he say all this stuff that almost everything he said we're ignoring, and the only things we'll ever cite from him we take out of context and misrepresent? How can he have done away with the Torah when his first public declaration says, "Don't think I have come to do away with the Torah"?
That's a biggie.
Okay, well, so it's it says that the Torah is the way, it's the path of lives.
Right.
Now, beyond that, what else does it say? It's about for rational discourse about being right.
Right.
About the proper argument and logical debate to reason, to prove, and to decide, to judge and to be correct, to be rational about being right.
So, to your point, that you've mentioned the other day is far better to be right
mm-hmm.
than it will ever be to be good. He can take care of your shortcomings,
mm-hmm.
but you have to be on the right path.
Yeah. Paul, David was seldom good.
Yeah, he was, I'm not even sure he'd be a really good neighbor.
No, but he was absolutely right when it came to the Torah and its covenant, the terms and conditions of the covenant.
Remember, he taught it, too, so, I mean, he taught the right way.
Right. So, for rational discourse, I mean, that's a broadside against Pauline doctrine, because what Paul did is he said, the Torah means nothing because it's of the flesh, and what we're replacing it with is faith. So, with faith, there is no rational discourse. Matter of fact, faith trumps reason. It's a substitute for reason.
Mm-hmm.
There is no right or wrong in Christianity because there is no substance to Christianity.
No,
Paul didn't provide any substance. It's all faith. It's all make-believe.
How do you believe something if you couldn't prove it? I mean, it's just speculation. It's a theory.
Right. So you can't have a rational discourse about Christianity. In fact, my whole argument about Christianity is that you cannot be an informed and rational Christian. It's impossible.
That's totally.
If you're informed and rational, you cannot be a Christian. And so that's what God is saying, that the Torah is not only the way of lives, but it's the best means to engage in a rational discourse. Now, not a rational discourse on everything. I mean, the Torah doesn't really have a lot to say about how to mash potatoes into a pleasing paste. You know, if you want to know how to cook your rhubarbs, you're not going to find that. There's no rational discourse in the Torah on rhubarb preparation.
No. You can eat whatever vegetables you want.
Yeah, but there is a rational discourse in the Torah about being right,
mm-hmm.
about being accurate and correct in teaching,
mm-hmm.
about living a life that is disciplined and moral, self-control, where you exercise good judgment.
Right, and you raise your children appropriately.
Right. Yet God wants you to engage in a rational discourse so that you know what is right and what is wrong, what is true and what is false, what is productive and counterproductive. That's why we do this program.
Yes, sir.
Now, he says it's also for the purpose of you closely examining and carefully considering so as to protect Shamar.
Mm-hmm.
You from the woman who was evil, repulsive and offensive, severing the relationship from the smooth and seductive tongue of the treacherous whore.
Yeah.
Are you aware of any place where Yahweh speaks of a harlot and a whore?
I think it has to do with Babel.
Yeah.
As in Bible.
Yeah. Yeah, Babylon was not a term that Yahweh ever used when talking about, Babylon. Now, the Hebrew word is Babel, and Babel means to confuse, but it also means with the Lord, with Baal.
With
and the, yeah, and the Lord ain't God, folks. The Lord is Satan.
Yeah.
And so the whore is the whore of Babel. Who is the whore of the Christian Bible?
Well, of course, is the one who joined it was Paul.
Yeah. And the Roman Catholic Church is the, and if you were to take a whore, the whore of the Bible would be the group that put it together the way it is right now.
Yeah.
Roman Catholic Church.
Mary Bale. They all
yeah. It. Yeah. In fact, it really resonates here when you realize that, and that's what you've just said, is that after Yahweh praises Ephesus for their affinity to the teaching of Yahochanan and their animosity
towards
to the false apostle,
right,
which would have been, this was the place where Paul and Yahochanan had their conflict. You know, after he says, you know, you're cool because you've rejected Paul and stayed steadfast with the teaching of Yahochanan, then Yahweh goes to three definitions. He says that the Christian church is in essence the seat of Satan, that it is married to Baal, Jezebel, married to Baal, married to the Lord, which is Satan, and is dead. So you're right. That's what this, that's what he is saying here. You know, this will protect you from the whore of the Bible, the whore of Babel, the whore of, as we would say it, Babylon. It's going to protect you from Christianity.
You'll have to walk away. I mean, don't miss the point. I mean, I know you're right. Not, but I mean, about myself. Don't miss the point. You can recognize all these things, and then you can still be there. You cannot support this stuff.
Right.
You cannot be with this stuff.
And this is the woman, the female individual, who is evil, repulsive, and offensive, severing the relationship. And she is a smooth and seductive talker, but yet a treacherous whore. And Yahweh uses this metaphor of whore and harlot. Because it is an extramarital perversion by which people exchange money. And the covenant is a marriage vow.
Right.
And so this is the trade-off is between the covenant as a marriage vow and paying for the relationship you have with. When does the whore love the John?
No, of course not.
No. No, she's doing it for money, not for love. Yet Yahweh loves his covenant children. So it's saying Yahweh's thing, you're not paying a dime,
no.
And you're getting genuine love. And with the whore, you're paying dearly, and you're getting nothing.
Or
disrespect. Or disrespect in the process. You should not genuinely or continually covet or find desirable her beautiful and graceful appearance in your heart. And do not let her actually obtain control of you on an ongoing basis with her flaunting display of flashing rays of light or her flirting eyes. Do you know any place that there's beautiful and graceful appearances that are associated with the whore of the Bible?
In today's world, we have, gosh, if you've been to Rome, this and or any church that has stained glass windows where the light goes through it.
Yeah. The Vatican comes to mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been there.
The cathedrals around the world.
Yeah, these monuments to Satan are magnificently adorned.
Yeah, they take all these beautiful buildings that are Christian churches, beautiful and graceful appearance. It says don't covet or find it desirable in your heart. And do not let her actually obtain control of you on an ongoing basis with her flaunting display of flashing rays of light or flirting eyes. Wow. You know, that's exactly.
You know, if you look up eyes, when it talks about the eyelashes, which is where, how you flirt, you know. With,
right. Uh-huh. Sure.
And it's described in the ancient time as like a rays coming out of the sun. I just thought that was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, even your eyelashes look like the sunburst kind of rays they put on on so many symbols today to associate the symbol with the sun. The Obama sticker, his bumper sticker, and the big signs that he has when he was running for office were always a rising sun symbol. Yeah. Erdogan used the same symbol when he ran for power in Turkey. Yeah. You go into a Catholic church and you will see sunbursts and halos and this sort of thing everywhere. Everywhere.
Right. Oh, yeah. Round disc with all the rays of sun and nobody can figure that out? Come on.
Yeah. And what did Paul claim when he was on the road to Damascus? What did he claim? How did he see?
Light.
Flashing rays of light. That's what he said. Blinded him. By the way, does Yahweh ever suggest that that the light of his Torah blinds?
Oh, yeah. You remember when he blinded Moshe.
Now, yeah, Moshe saw him.
I was going to walk over there. You can't see, of course, but now that I'm...
Yeah, I didn't see. I don't recall him when Yahweh met with Moshe. He didn't blind him, did he?
No.
No, but old... And people came to Yahusha, did he blind them, or did he give sight to the blind? He opened their eyes, yeah. He gave sight to the blind. But no, this spirit that Paul wants Christians to believe is Jesus, he blinded him. It must have been a bad day. Now, those who were lame and, you know, were having trouble just maneuvering in life, didn't he cause the lame to walk?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but with Paul, he was having a bad day because what did he do? He cast him down to the ground so that he immediately, rather than being able to walk, he was thrust down to the ground, and it took him days to recover. It was such a uplifting experience.
Like to kill him.
Like to kill him. and you can't figure out that. Yeah, that isn't the same spirit. I mean, come on, Christians. It's so obvious. And here he is poking fun at Paul, saying, you know, don't be tricked by the flashing rays of light.
And just to keep the record straight, I fell for all this stuff, too. So, I mean, don't if you're...
Oh, yeah, I did.
Once you see it in print, once you really look at it, you go...
Yeah.
Am I such a fool?
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, well, I fell for Pauline Christianity to believe as Paul wants you to believe that he was inspired by God. Yeah, I'm sorry. There's a zero possibility of that. For indeed, the price of the loathed female whore is as much as an everlasting loaf of bread. But the woman's soul. A loaf of bread, but a woman's or man's soul that she stalks and eternally victimizes is valuable. Now, you can deal with Kikar Lakem a number of different ways. It's the he's either just itemizing. He says, you know, with this whore, you're selling your soul in essence. But you're paying her with the equivalent of a loaf of bread, and you can say, "All right, so it's just, you know, it's just saying that that's the price
of a life."
Yeah, it's the price of a prostitute.
Yeah,
but if you really consider kikar lekem, it can either be 70 pounds or an unbroken expanse of grain, a round wafer from kaar to whirl around, or but you can also have it as contrasting the bread of life, matzah. The round, so it can either be the bread of life, matzah, or the round wafer of Christianity. It can be everlasting, because odd is typically when you deal with odd, it means forever, eternal, unlimited, as opposed to as much as it would be unlimited. So it's not, the price of a prostitute isn't an unlimited amount of bread. It's you're paying that prostitute the bread of life, the bread of everlasting life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yet,
exactly.
The soul that you're sacrificing by paying the bread of everlasting life, by forfeiting it, is valuable.
The only valuable thing you really have.
Yeah.
I mean, truly, truly, it's the only thing. If you had asked my wife, as we began to study the first time, she would have said, "My soul, the reason why you," if you ask her, "Why are you doing this?" She said, "Well, the soul is the most only thing, that's the most important thing that I have."
Absolutely. The only thing we have that has the potential for eternal value. Yeah. Can a man consistently scoop up and continually carry away fire? In his lap, or his deceitful garments, and not be burned by the serpent?
No,
really interesting. You know, you can't play with fire and get, you know, you play with fire and get burnt, the old line. Well, it came from this proverb. Can a man consistently scoop up and carry away fire, combustible material, in his lap, in his chest or bosom, or in his deceitful garments, and not be burned by the serpent? Wola sarof, and not be consumed and destroyed by the snake's fire. You know, it's interesting that sarof is every bit as serpent as it is fire.
Mm-hmm.
He's equating the woman with the serpent. The serpent, he says, is Hasatan.
Right. Right from the garden.
Right. So we're right back to Bible, Satan, the serpent, the adversary. All of it ties together. You're either with God or you're in opposition to him.